Right. Hi, everybody. I'm Dan. Thank you for allowing me to be here tonight. And I want to thank the Saturday group for inviting me to speak. It's an honor and privilege to be here. Got quite the words. I'm tired. A lot of stuff going on. But thank you, Ariel. I appreciate you sharing for us. And I owe a lot to Al-Anon. It's changed my life. And there's a lot of folks here tonight that I care quite a bit, for. And if I don't know you, I would love to get to know you. And I'm just going to tell you my experience, strength, and hope, and hopefully you might get something out of it. I come from, I was raised here in this area. My father was from Tennessee, and my mom's from overseas. She's from South Africa, and my dad met her over on the continent of Africa, and they fell in love, and he brought her back over here to Tennessee, and they, they loved each other. Dad was a drinker, heavy drinker, moonshine, whiskey, whatever. But you know what? Mom never touched a drink. Mom doesn't drink at all. And sometimes I wish she would have a drink. But, it's just like, but she married my dad, and my dad, he loved to drink. And, he was on the ships going around from the different ports of the world, and she was over here, and she really didn't know nobody over here. And, finally it came to a point. And, when I was young, I remember my dad getting together with his family and my grandpa, and they were drinking, Jack Daniels. They loved whiskey. And, as a young boy, I used to watch that, and I thought, man, they sure look like they're having fun, playing guitars and singing, and it looked like a real good time. And finally, but I didn't see none of the I didn't really see none of the family affected by alcohol with my mom. I mean, it was like, I didn't see behind the scene of what was going on. I seen that look like fun part, but I do remember, a little bit of the disagreements and the arguing. And sometimes my dad would come home a little bit too much drinking, and, but you know what? Eventually, my mom, she said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to live like this. And if you continue to drink, like this, I'm not going to be here. And she gave it an ultimatum. And, my dad, he stopped drinking. And that always surprised me how he could just stop like that, and I never really seen him like drunk after she gave him that ultimatum. And my story is, I watched that. I grew up like that. We had an incident I got married right out of high school, and my wife at the time, she didn't drink at all. She didn't like drinking, and I remember what happened was we got a call on Valentine's Day, and I remember she gasped and she handed me the phone, and I remember, you know, I talked to my dad and he had told me my brother passed away, and I was 19 and my brother was 23. And it was, you know, it rocked my family. It was just like, if it was like throwing a rock through if the glass window was my family, it was throwing a rock right through it. And, you know, my family was never quite recovered from that. You know, it shattered a lot of things in my family. And I remember my wife at the time, she said, "Man, your family ought to get over that," you know. And my mom was just devastated. She was devastated by my brother's death. And then it ended up me and my wife split up, and we went our separate ways. And you know, I started getting on with a different kind of life, and a life without my brother, without my wife, and ended up, you know, I ended up going over to overseas to see my mom's place where she grew up, and you know, I drank a bit, and you know, when I came back, I really didn't have a whole lot going on. And I remember I ended up going to school to learn a trade. And as I was learning this trade, I ran into you know, my son's mom at the college, and we met up, and we ended up hanging out, and you know, we didn't get along at all, and she drank, and she did a lot of things, and I remember we went our separate ways, and we were apart, and she called me up and said she was pregnant, and you know, that was just like, oh my God. And you know, where I came from, it was just like, you know, if you got somebody pregnant, you would marry them. And I remember telling my dad at the time, I said, you know, my son's mom's Mary. I said, Mary's pregnant. And he said, and I said, I was thinking about, you know, asking her to marry me. And he said, well, you made one mistake. I don't think you should make two, you know. And wise words that I didn't really think that much about them, but you know, looking back, that was a while back, and wise words. And but I did, we moved in together, and oh man, it was crazy. It was a crazy life. Ended up, you know, we couldn't live together, and you know, and I was drinking with her, and it got really bad, and it ended up that we went our separate way. She took my son. We had my son, and ended up he was about two and a half, going on three, and she took off with him, and I didn't know where they went, and man, that just broke my heart, you know, because I loved my boy, I loved my son, and when when that happened, I didn't know what to do. I had no program, had nothing to fall back on. It was just like, and I turned to what I knew back then, and that was just like, you know, me drinking. And it ended up, you know, I decided that, you know, I had a moment of clarity where I was thinking, man, we both can't be doing this. This boy needs somebody in his life. And I ended up giving up, you know, drinking and getting my life together and being a father for my son. And so fast forward, and I always wanted my son to come live with me, and ended up, it was like I remarried, and not to my son's mom, but to another woman. And it ended up, my son's mom ended up going to, I think it was Chowchilla Prison in California, and for drinking. And I don't know the whole story behind that, but I know that it was my son, my dream came true. It was like my son came to live with me. He was like 11, 12 years old. And man, you know what? It's like I was telling somebody recently, that was just my dream right there. And she was in prison for a while, and I didn't have her, you know, around. And you know what? We had a good time. We did a lot of camping trips, a lot of, you know, he never seen me drinking, partying, or none of that stuff. You know, he had a good life. And then ended up, my son's mom was paroled in, she used to live up in Northern California, up by Redding. And she got paroled here in Contra Costa County. And at that time, my son, I don't know, he was probably 13, 14. No, he was probably about 15, 14 or 15. And she got paroled here. And, you know, there was a couple times she tried to call and she tried to run the show out of prison. And I told her, I said, hey, you know, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen here. And, you know, it's like, because for a long time, all, you know, what she did was she used my son as a tool. And it was just like, it was just a nightmare until he came to live with me. And, but when he became a teenager, got into high school, and she got paroled in this county, you know, it wasn't a good thing. And I just haven't told this story in a long time. And what happened was, you know, I used to travel around for my work. They sent me all over California, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, wherever the work was. And my wife at the time, you know, she'd hold down the fort while I was gone. And I remember one time she told me, she said, well, your son is, I think he's smoking. And I, oh, that's surprising. And I was out of town working. And I said, well, you know what, you're in charge, you know, you do what you need to do there. And she ended up going down, and she went down to the high school and found bottles of whiskey, and she found some other stuff in the car. And that's where my trip with how alcohol affected me through somebody else started affecting my life. And me and my son started, you know, going down this road where I had no control over. And it ended up, you know, and I thought, well, you know, he might be drinking a little. I never thought he really had, you know, I didn't want to see it. You know, I was blind. I didn't want to see what was going on, really. You know, he's doing the high school thing. And it ended up, I remember one day he at the house, we were into some, you know, got into something about something. And I remember looking in his eyes, and I remember just seeing the glazed eyes. And I thought, man, you're high, aren't you? And he was just like, he didn't look at me, and he wasn't admitting it. And that's where this crazy road started, you know, where it was just like trying to control somebody else's drinking and using. And that's, at the time, I thought, well, I can, you know, I'm his parent. I need to get a handle on this. And there was no putting a handle on that. And it ended up just, I remember I told this a couple of people that I remember he used to tell me, like, I can't wait for 140 days. And I was like, man, what 140 days? What's going on? And then it was like, man, I can't wait for 90 days. And finally we were into it about something. I mean, we were always about it. You know, he couldn't understand why I didn't want him to have a car if he was drinking. And I was like, man, you can't, you're not even supposed to be drinking, and you're driving, you know, our car. Ended up, he told me, well, in 80 days, I'll be 18 years old and I can do whatever I want. And you know what? I had no program of Al-Anon, and I just looked at him and I said, you know what? And I had a little stepdaughter here living with me, and she was watching this whole play out, you know, at the household. How's dad going to handle this? How's mom going to handle, you know? And I was just like, you know, I said, you don't have to wait till you're 18. If you can't live by these, abide by the rules of this house, I said, you can't live here. And he ended up going over to his mom's, and his mom was drinking and partying. And that was how his story kept going. And it ended up, you know, that broke my heart. You know, that broke my heart. That was in 2000, I think it was 2001, 2002. And ended up, my marriage broke up, trying to deal with all this stuff. He was getting DUIs. A lot of things was going on, which I had no idea what to do. And I finally, I ran into somebody, and they invited me to an Al-Anon meeting. And I thought, well, you know what, at this point it was like, what do I have to lose? What do I have to lose? And I ended up coming to an Al-Anon meeting, and you know what? It just changed my life. It changed my life. It was like, I remember, I give a shout out to my Thursday group that I used to go to quite regularly. And I remember going there, and they have a thing where they stop the meeting 15 minutes before the meeting ends. Is there any newcomers that would like to say something, you know? And gosh, you know what? I was holding so much in for so long. And during that time, they asked that question, and I just let out that what was going on. I have my son, he's drinking, and my marriage fell apart and all this. And you know what, man, it was just like these folks just gathered around, gave me their numbers, loved me until I could love myself, you know, and I'll be forever grateful for that. You know, I became part of that group, you know. It was just like, I come back. I mean, at first it was like, I was still working. So it was like, I'd go away to do a job. And then when I got off, I'd come back. And finally I ended up to getting a job where I could finally be there on a regular basis, and started becoming part of the group, started taking on me and somebody else here used to set up the chairs there every week. And it was so much fun. It was just like, and we'd talk and do the meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting. And we'd go out for this was back in simpler times before a pandemic, where we'd go out for lunch and you know, it was just fellowship. And you know what? I learned so much. And, I started looking at the steps and how they, how they worked in my life, and got me a sponsor. And, I realized that I was trying to control something that I was completely powerless over. It was the first time where it was like, I am completely powerless over someone else's drinking. And I never wanted to admit that, I thought if I just did this, I could get them to stop drinking. But the minute that I started focusing on me instead of the alcoholic, and I started working the steps and quit trying to fix the alcoholic in my life and start working on myself. And I looked and I seen that, not only was I powerless over someone's alcohol, that, I was powerless over a lot of things. I was powerless over a lot of places. I couldn't control where his mom's house. I was powerless over, people, Danny, his mom. All this stuff. And I remember, like, when people used to tell me to pray for his mom, and I thought, you're crazy. You got to be out of your mind. I'm not praying for this person that's making my life, and my influence. And it was just like, I ended up just trying it out. And it, I had a big resentment, and I realized that she was an alcoholic that hadn't found recovery. And I started having empathy for her. And, that was a big step for me. And I was able to, going through the steps, seeing that I was powerless over person's alcohol, life was unmanageable. I didn't want to admit that, because no one wants to admit that, their life's unmanageable. But let me tell you, I've been caring for parents now, and it's just like, I do believe in a God, a higher power. That God gives me the breath every day. I seen my dad take his last breath. I'm my mom's on hospice right now, and it's like, I am powerless. If God decides I don't want breath tonight, I'm not living. So it became apparent that, how I am powerless. My life is unmanageable. If I try to think that, oh, I'm in charge and I'm managing everything, I'm better off just thinking that, my life's unmanageable. And it's like, I take care of what I can, and I leave God the rest. The second step, came to believe power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Insanity in my life was thinking I could control somebody else. My behavior was, insanity. What I was trying to do, how I was trying to manage the alcoholic, and it's like, it doesn't say, it says there's a cliff note there. It says restore to sanity. So that means I'm insane. The thinking that I'm using is insane. So it's like, just take a note of that. Third step, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I really thought this was, you know, person wanted me to, you know, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. At that time, I did not understand really God. I mean, I knew of God, but I really didn't understand at all. And I still don't. I still don't. But the deal for me is I try to understand God. And all that means, I mean, my sponsor told me to just finish up working the steps. And, you know, I mean, so I did an inventory. Step four, I did an inventory, a personal inventory, you know, and for me, it's like the way an inventory works for me. It's like if you have a store, you got to see what goods are selling and what goods aren't. And you know what? You don't hold on to the bad goods. You throw them away. And it's like looking at my life in an inventory, it was like there were certain things that wasn't working in my life. So I shared that with God and another human being in steps five. And I came to step six, where it was just like, you know, I had to be ready to have God remove the defects of character in my life, you know. And that's all that was being, getting to the point where I was willing to let go of these things that aren't working in my life. And, you know, and then step seven is, you know, where I humbly ask God to remove these defects of character. And, you know what? And it's like every day I can grab one of those defects back to tomorrow, today, whatever. But it's like, I have to be willing. I don't remove them. God removes them. But it's like that's, I have to just be willing and ask God to remove them. After I did that, we looked back over at that inventory and where was I wrong? The people that I, you know, who had I wronged in my life? And I went back, I was able to look at my son's mom, what, you know, instead of looking at what she had done to me, but look at my part. And I had a part. And it's like, that's the one thing. It's like, you know, before I used to look at things, it's like, well, do I really owe? I looked at it like it was a scale. Did this person harm me more than I harmed them? Or did I, you know, and it was like, no, I don't even, you know what? And for me, it's like when I'm working these steps, I'm not even looking at the other person's, what they've done. I'm looking at my inventory. It's doing my inventory. Where have I made, you know, what do I need to make amends for? So what I did is I make a list of people I'd harmed and become willing to make amends to them. Then I make amends to them in step nine. And, you know, right now I'm pretty much got a clean street right now. There's nobody that I really can think of that I have to make amends to today. Now, tomorrow might change. Tomorrow I might need, you know, but that's when I come to step 10 and it's like, you know, I continue to take personal inventory and when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. That keeps it keeps my side of the street clean. And that means I'm working these principles in all my affairs. For the, you know, as long as I'm working this program, I'm working these principles. That means that, okay, I did a step four, but you know what? That doesn't mean I don't ever have to take any more inventory. That don't mean I have to, you know, so I'm living the steps by applying them in my life. And then step 11, sought through prayer, meditation, improved my conscience contact with God as I understand them. And it's like, you know, thank God that I have a God in my life that I can let my son be who he's going to be. I'm not his God. I can give him to God. And that's what I do today. Our relationship has changed. And let me see, you know, and step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, try to practice these principles in all my affairs. that's what I try to do every day, is practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, like I said, the last 3 or 4, almost 4 years, it's like I've been a caregiver, you know. Therefore, my dad was, he died of cancer. We got a pandemic. My mom was diagnosed, and now she's on hospice. And, you know, I was wondering if, man, how am I going to be a speaker? And I had to take a time out from my mom. And, you know, I mean, I didn't really want to leave her tonight, you know, because hospice come by a Friday and said she don't have much longer. And, you know, my mom, she's a fighter, you know, and she's not going down easy. And, you know, but I love the way my outlook on life is today, you know. Even with the alcoholic, my son's driving up today, and you know, we have a relationship today. You know what, whether he drinks or whether he uses or whatever he does, we have a relationship today. It's beyond me. And it's like, I like to, you know, it's like, I like our tradition 5. It says, you know, our primary purpose is to, you know, carry a message. Message is, you know, I practice the 12 steps in my life. I learn about alcoholics and I give love and encouragement to somebody else that comes in the door. Love it. I love it, you know, and I attend several Al-Anon meetings, and it's just like, I've never been so blessed to have so many caring people in my life. I can pick up the phone, and that's one thing I you know, if there's anyone new, I really encourage you to, you know, pick up a phone, talk, because it's like, you know what, it's like, until I started talking about what was going on in my life, it was just like, it was me against the problem. And it's like, I realized that there's, you know, in our preamble, it says, or maybe it's in our closing where it says, you know, nothing. I'm not a book quoter or nothing like that, but it's saying how our burdens can be lessened. And it's like, you know what? And it's like, it seems like when I share with another Al-Anon, it's like, it's just, it's lessened. And it's like, so what else can I say? I don't want to take the meeting hostage. What is it? Is this 8:30 or am I done? What's that?
A couple minutes.
Okay. So in closing, I would just like to say that, you know what? I love Al-Anon. I love recovery. I love the 12 steps. So grateful to, you know, have the 12 steps in my life today. I'll give you a little story here. A few years back, probably about four or five years ago, my daughter, she was pregnant. She couldn't have a children. And she's told me she was pregnant. And my son told me, you know what, him and his partner were pregnant. She was pregnant. Now I was thinking to myself, gosh, my daughter, I really, you know, wanted to see the child. My son, I was thinking, oh my God, what is he bringing into the world? You know? And it was just like, God's got it. And it's like, I look, you know, now I have a granddaughter. My daughter lost her child. My son has brought Jasmine and, you know, he delivered her. He delivered her in the bathroom, used his shoelace to tie the umbilical cord. And it's just like, you know what? It's like, I have no idea what God wants. It's just like, I don't, you know, and it just brought it to me. And I just love my and my grandchildren today, you know, and it's just like, it's just a gift, you know. There's so many blessings in life, and it's just like if I get wrapped up in other, you know, another person's life, it's just like I love the do's and don'ts. I encourage anyone, if you're having a lot of problems, maybe read the do's and don'ts, and there's probably something you're not doing, and there's something that you're doing that you're not supposed to be doing. So with that, I just thank you so much for giving me your time tonight, and God bless you all in your recovery, and peace goes with you. Yeah.